I thought probably the best way to start is start with the higher level issues like the economy. So I'm going to pose a question to initially Cathy and to Damien. Guys, we've seen a number of reductions in the cash rate over the last 4 to 5 months. Has that stimulated lending in your businesses? Have you seen a definable change, or has it just been steady? Cathy, do you want to go first?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And I think that's the question that is on everybody's lips, actually. Look, there has been a slight upturn, if you like, in the volumes. But I think the economy, and I'm sure Guy's going to comment on it, but for the first time, it doesn't sort of really matter how much you drop the interest rates. People have still got to be confident. And it's the consumer confidence that I think is the malaise, if you like, that's affecting Australia. Even though when you go overseas, you sort of come back and you go, well, I don't know what everybody's worried about. But I think it's that general level of consumer confidence. And they're in a time when, I think for the first time that I can remember, they've lost confidence, firstly, in the government. Because when I say that, I say it from the point of view, they're not sure if they say they're going to do something, they're actually going to do it. Well, we've never really had that before. So there's, and I'm not talking about one party or another, I'm just saying I think that's something that's really worrying people. So I think that's impacting them. You've got the carbon tax coming in, you've got the cost of living going up. So people are sort of saying, well, that's good, but is it enough to get them to unleash that extra dollars that they might be saving from their home loan repayments? I'm not sure.
So the answer to my question
is... Well, it's up a bit, but it's not where we would have seen that, say, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, this sort of drop, you would have gone bang. It hasn't sort of flown straight away into the investor sector, which you'd expect to see some increase in. And I think there's a lot of initiatives being, you know, like the New South Wales government is trying to stimulate the building sector. We've definitely got a shortage of housing. There's no doubt about that. And I think there's some pent-up demand there in the first-time buyers. But is it enough? Considering the risk appetites of the various banks, and that's still an issue, to unlock it. And it's not the rampant sort of take-up that we would have seen a couple of years ago.
So that's that cloud of uncertainty.
Absolutely.
Overhanging the economy. Damien, your view?
Similar to Cathy's. I mean, we've seen a bit of an uptick, particularly in May. Excuse me. But I think there is a lack of confidence in with the Australian consumer that seems to make little sense when you objectively look at where the Australian economy is. With respect to our peers, I think overlaying all that is post-GFC, and whether it's a function of survivor's guilt or something else, I don't know. But I think Australians have changed.
I like that term, survivor's guilt.
I think it does strike me that Australians may have changed their attitude to debt. Whether that's sustainable, whether that's deep-seated, I don't know. But the notion pre-GFC that you know, borrow as much as you can and go as hard as you can, be it for consuming stuff or for buying stuff like houses. I just think Australians have become somewhat more conservative and there's a new prudence. Now, personally, and this is talking against my own book as someone who makes money as a consequence of people borrowing more, I think that's a reasonable thing and not a bad thing in terms of the sustainability of the Australian economy long term.
Before I get Guy's view on this, when you say an uptick, is it in first-home buyers, is it in refis, is it investors? Could you isolate it?
Not really. It's a sort of a small uptick across the board rather than any one cohort jumping up and saying, yay, you know, low interest rates, ship it in.
Okay.
There's a bit of movement in the refi, obviously.
A bit in the refi
going on, but it's nothing that it's got us all getting extremely excited with at that point.
Okay. Guy, does this sort of feedback surprise you? That the cash rate reduction used to have almost an automatic impact in terms of people starting to pick up the phone and whatever?
Not particularly. I mean, Glenn gave a speech actually only a few metres from here a couple of weeks ago, which got a reasonable amount of coverage.
It did.
On the glass half full. And one of the things he said in the course of that talk was that we don't expect credit to be going back to the same pace it was in the mid-2000s, or household spending more generally going back to that pace. And so the sort of pace we're seeing at credit growth at the moment, it's not clear it's really going to pick up that much. So I'm not sure that the interest rate reduction we expected would generate a hell of a lot of people rushing in the door to take out a new mortgage. But It's probably going to help people pay down debt a little faster. I'm sure you guys are both seeing a bit of a pickup in repayments. Mm. At the margin, it's probably helping, but I suspect we're at the case where borrowing rates aren't necessarily the major constraint. It's exactly what Cathy was talking about. It's that uncertainty hanging over things, most of which is coming from offshore as much as anything. And while ever that's around, we're going to see this more prudent behaviour, as Damien described it.
How good is your crystal ball? How long would this cloud of uncertainty pervading, drifting south, southeast from Europe going to take? How long? Who knows?
No one knows. I don't even think the European leaders know that. It's in their hands. I suspect they're going to be confronted. They already have been confronted with a fairly major decision to make. I suspect they won't be able to put off that decision for too much longer, and they'll have to decide, make that big decision one way or the other.
So the idea of kicking the can down the road can't go on forever.
No, I suppose if you look at what's happened over the last couple of months, every time there's been a piece of positive news, the time it's taken to dissipate has got shorter. Last week we were down to a few hours. So I think the scope for more of that is certainly diminished.
Okay. Cathy or Damien, are you noting great difference between states or between different demographic cohorts or anything like that?
Just as far as brokers go, I think the broking space itself has got a bit of life back into it where it had got subdued. So we've seen a bit of a resurgence coming back through there. Certainly New South Wales would have more momentum going for it than probably, say, Victoria. And Western Australia is... it's your fly-in, fly-out there that is very deceptive. And, I mean, I have sat next to people on planes myself, going back to the Hunter Valley, for goodness sake, out of Perth. Mm. So there is a big fly-in, fly-out market in Perth.
From all over Australia.
Yeah, and so that's impacting WA, even though I believe we're starting to see that south-east pocket starting to turn around a bit, but we've still got the issues going on in south-east Queensland. So it's a little bit all over the place. Mm. I really think and Guy, I'd be interested in your views on this. I mean, it's the unemployment, I think, that's worrying people. Because it's
The prospect of unemployment.
Yeah, well, it's every other day you're hearing various things, you know. And it's the underemployment which impacts, right? And that's where you start to get the arrears problems, and that's still happening. They've eased back a bit, but they're still there.
In my mind, it was only going to be about 5 minutes before you'd take my job and be throwing the questions to Guy. Guy, do you want to take Cathy's questions?
Sure. I mean, on the regional differences, I mean, it's interesting sitting here in Adelaide, right? In the early 90s, and I'd actually just left town by then because there was absolutely nothing to do in Adelaide in the early 90s.
I'm glad you qualified that.
It wasn't another boring Thursday night in Adelaide. The regional differences now are nothing like they were in the early 90s. I'm not trying to downplay differences now, but if you're, in the early 90s, a lot of my generation just left here. That's not happening. I mean, unemployment across the country, the variation there is actually not that large. There's WA at one end, notwithstanding Cathy's point about fly in, fly out, there's just not a lot of unemployment at all in Perth. Tasmania a bit at the other end. Places in southeast Queensland not doing so well, but the regional disparities at the moment aren't as large as they've been in the past. They're certainly there. There's obviously probably a greater dispersion in terms of industry rather than in terms of region. I suppose on the unemployment story, yes, you read a lot about various companies laying off people, particularly when it's actually the media laying off their own people.
Which gets more media.
Yes. But you don't read... I mean, for instance, earlier this year, Rio announced they were looking to fill 7,500 jobs. That was a page 3 story in a paper for one day. Whereas, not wanting to diminish the impact of the layoffs when they occur, but they tend to get a lot more coverage than the companies who are actually adding people. And, when we look at the aggregate, which is the net of all of those, is employment's growing, unemployment's been basically going sideways at around 5% for close on a year now.
Okay. Guy, to you, occasionally economists, some well regarded, others in search of a headline, will say there's going to be a housing collapse in Australia, like Ireland, like Spain, like the US. How do you respond to that?
In a number of ways. I mean, we've put out a lot on this over the last few years, partly in response to those sort of comments. As Cathy mentioned earlier, I mean, there has been, we don't see any sign of oversupply here, sort of in the construction side, in the country as a whole. In southeast Queensland, probably, but elsewhere, basically, no. You know, the level of housing construction, the level is about where it was 10 years ago, and the population's, whatever, you know, 15% higher. So in that sense, there's no overbuilding as occurred, certainly in Spain, for instance. People point to the level of debt that the Australian households carry, and it is relatively high compared to some of our peers, but we don't see any problem with the household servicing that. It tends to be held by, on average, by the upper end of the income distribution rather than, there's not a whole bunch of first home buyers out there gearing up a lot. The average loan to valuation ratio is not particularly high. And, when we look at arrears, they've basically been going sideways at a pretty low level now for, 18 months or so.
Yep.
So it was a bit of a tick up the early part of last year. But since around about the middle of last year, it's gone sideways, and that's before any impact of most recent rate reductions.
So you think it's overdone? More economists in search of a headline than reality.
Yep, I would say, I think that's right. I mean, it's not something that keeps me awake at night.
Okay.
Developments in other parts of the world, the Australian housing market, no.
I'd like to move now from the broader economy into the financial services sector, and one of the big items that's got a lot of coverage in the last 6-12 months has been the funding costs of the major lenders. And a lot of debate. They're going up. They're not going up. They're going down. It's the mark. You did a paper on this.
Yeah.
How do you respond to this debate?
Well, I mean, ultimately, I think it's we try and put the facts out there. We're not out there to have an opinion of it. It's actually, to some extent, this is actually a factual matter. They either are or they are not. And we do our best job. We put this out in March a few months ago now. At estimating what's going on with the funding costs. And I suppose the point which I made a few times in recent months is all the action at the moment in terms of funding costs is on the deposit side, reflecting what Cathy said. The deposit market is extremely competitive, as you're all probably aware when you look at the rates which are advertised in banks' windows at the moment. They're higher than they've been. In fact, they're higher relative to the cash rate or to the money market rates than they've ever been. And there's a hell of a lot of competition around deposits, and that, as deposits are an increasing share of overall funding, the deposit book reprices quite quickly because the term deposits aren't more than 4 or 5 months. That's what's really driving the funding situation at the moment. And as of yesterday, deposit competition is still pretty intense.
It is.
It's as we've reduced the cash rate, deposit rates haven't come down. By anywhere near the full extent of that.
Mm. The observation you'd make, you could get for 3, 6 month, 12 month term deposits at the moment, anywhere between 4.5 and 5 and a bit. And there are banks out there, and I won't name them, but I can think of two, who are raising 6 or 12 month money at about 5.05 and have lending rates out there with a 5 in front of them, who are doing 5.89s, 5.99s. I'm not that good at maths, but it's very hard to make money doing that. And that's the challenge. So. And it's reasonably transparent. The old days of banks, the cost of money being a little hard to ascertain, because we're all really these days, and our bank, we're at 80-odd percent retail funded now. So the cost of a term deposit that you as a person go in and get to your bank is a reasonable proxy for the cost of the incremental cost of raising money for a bank. And you can see the gap between that and what you expect to pay for a mortgage. There'll be two blackboards. There'll be, we'll take your money at 5 and we'll lend it to you at 5.99.
Just quietly, though, you wouldn't want to be having to access funds offshore. And I think that's the other issue. that you know, the competition for funding offshore with the sovereigns, etc. You know, you just never know whether it's open or it's not open. And I mean, you know, I sit on Prosco, and you know, sometimes the markets are closed, and the situation is not stable, and that's putting a whole lot more pressure there. If we suddenly had rapid credit growth, it would be an interesting situation.
That said, let me just follow up on that, though. The Australian banks haven't actually had any particular problem in accessing offshore markets over the past past year or two, really.
Well, they've chosen not to go into it, though.
Yeah, and, but they're able to do that because deposits are actually growing faster than credit growth and have been doing so for the last couple of years.
Yep.
So, mind you, in the world that you're talking about where credit suddenly is growing a lot faster, my guess is the world's probably a happier place. And
it's true.
That's might corollary. Be a bit easier to fund your book.
That's corollary. Guy, can you see securitisation going anywhere back to what it might have been in, say, 2007?
Not in 2007, no. I mean, the last year there was about 20-odd billion of new deals.
So it's picked up a bit.
Guys like these guys will do two or three issues a year of reasonable size. That's true of probably most of the regionals. The majors have actually got into that market where they wasn't a market they particularly used before. But as Damien said, it's more the non-bank lenders where we haven't seen much issuance. That said, we saw two over the past month from non-bank issuers. But part of the story is that a whole bunch of the buyers who were around in 2007 don't exist anymore. They were the sieves who all basically imploded. They're not there. They're not coming back. Mm. The other buyers are still there, which is generating the sort of deal flow that we saw last year.
Right.
And they're still buying about the same as they used to buy, but there's just one large segment of the market which isn't there.
Which structurally has disappeared forever. Yeah. It's not going to be a cyclical thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is also, I suspect, in due course, issuance will probably pick up because I think the product has continued to perform extremely. The Australian RMBS product has continued to perform extremely well. No one's had any particularly every buyer of that has had a good experience with it if they're holding on to it. And so there is, as that brand damage which has come being inherited from other markets gradually fades, then I think you'll see the product. Volumes pick up, but just not back to where we were in 2007.
Okay. I know the RBA doesn't do forecasts of housing credit growth, but could you give us a qualitative view on where you think housing credit growth might go?
I mean, in the near term, it is going to stay where it is, because what we do know is from the loan approvals, and both Damien and Cathy have talked about that earlier, that, again, is consistent with credit growth staying 5-point-something. Mm. I mean, but I think, you know, and Glenn said this here a couple of weeks ago, that credit growing somewhere around the same pace as household income, which is sort of mid-single digits.
And the surprising thing, for a long time, it was growing way in front of household income.
Yeah, so it seems to be is a quite a likely outcome.
Okay. Guy, not Glenn, but John Laker, the chairman of APRA, gave a speech called Life in the Slow Lane, probably going back 9 months or so. Is that the biggest challenge for lenders, to be able to remain profitable in a slowing credit growth environment?
Not so much necessarily remaining profitable. I think they'll remain profitable. The question is, what level of profitability? And it is exactly as Damien and Cathy and Phil all put it, it's adjusting to the fact if credit growth is growing in the mid-single digits, it's how the financial sector, which was really the current structure to some extent reflected the era you were talking about where growth was in the mid-teens, recalibrating to a growth rate in the mid-single digits. And that issue is facing a number of industries at present. As Damien said, to some extent the finance sector hasn't been until now probably quite as stark as it has been elsewhere, but I think that is going to be the issue that the people are going to have to grapple with over the next year or so.
Okay.
Hi, it's Kim Robertson from the ABC. This is a question for Guy DeBell. How important is the looming EU meeting on global confidence? I think people are expecting big things. If big things don't happen, is confidence going to take a major hit?
There has been some expectation about something happening at the meeting later this week, although last night it seemed that expectations were already being lowered as to what might actually come out of that. I obviously, people would be happy if European leaders came up with a solution which everyone could see would work. That is clearly the case. To the extent that people... I'm not really sure about the level of people's expectations going into this. As I said, if something positive comes out, fantastic. We've all been waiting for that for quite some time. But I think expectations are already gradually getting lowered ahead of it.
They're modest. Guy, you're an observer of what's happening in lending markets. You know, is it a surprise that brokers constitute 40% of residential mortgages, and a view that Damien has that it might even be higher than that?
No, and whichever way we try and cut it, looking at the Fujitsu numbers, but also looking at it a few other ways, we end up with a number which is somewhere around 40, maybe low 40. So I think that's about right.
Will it stabilise there or grow?
Well, as I said, that's where it's been for the last 10 years. The one thing, I suppose, which people will need to get their head around at the moment is that if you look at turnover in the housing market, so if credit's growing at 5%, somewhere around there, the turnover in the housing market, just the number of transactions going through, is about as low as it was 20 years ago. And it's not necessarily going to stay down where it is, but that, you know, the deal flow potentially is going to be less, and it's going to be a question, I think, particularly actually for the banks who have got a large infrastructure in place predicated on a deal flow a lot higher than it is at the moment, as to what they're going to do about that. What they do about that may have implications for the broking sector. It may actually potentially going to be a positive for the broking sector.
Knock-on effects.
Yeah.
What do you think the major issue for the broking sector is in Australia for the next 12 to 18 months? What are these people here in the audience that are in the broking fraternity most got to face up to? Guy, any observations from your perspective?
I don't think I have anything more to add than what the experts who know that industry better. I mean, as I said earlier, I think it's adjusting to that lower deal flow. And, as Phil said on a few occasions, I've seen him in the past, you know, the industry has consolidated from where it was. That process probably isn't quite finished.
Okay, I've got one final question for each of you, and it's not on script, but I'd like you to give me your... We're here, and MFAA South Australia thought we were such a great group. We've been invited to come back here again, and we're here in 12 months' time. So it's 26 June 2013. I'm going to ask you to make a prediction. It could be about the economy, it could be about interest rates, it could be about the number of gold medals Australia wins at the Olympics. I want you to go out on a limb and give me a prediction that we can hold you accountable for in 12 months' time. Guy, do you want to give me your prediction?
I was going to say that Carlton will be the premiers in 12 months' time, which will be a popular call here.
You really are a dreamer, aren't you?
Yeah, I know, but I've pretty much given up on hope of that one now. And you guys have probably given up on the Crows after last weekend too. But,
what's your prediction?
We won.
I actually think, looking ahead 12 months, it's actually difficult. In part because I think I think the day of reckoning in Europe is probably going to happen sometime in that 12 months, and I don't know which way that's going to go.
Could be sooner, it could be later.
Yeah, and I don't know that anyone particularly knows which way that's going to go. Absent that, I think, you know, as we've said on a number of occasions, we're looking at the Australian economy, and it looks, the next 12 months is probably going to look roughly like we are today, which is a reasonable place to be.
Yep.
But we are somewhat of a hostage to developments in other parts of the world, which are, I think, are just extremely difficult to predict.
Just another question for Guy DeBell. I'm just interested in knowing, what are your thoughts on Paul Keating's proposal that Australia should wean itself off offshore funds and tap into our superannuation funds?
The funding structure of the banks at the moment is okay. As I said, at the moment it's changing, it's in the course of changing. Deposits are funding more of the lending, particularly the new flow from deposits. You know, I don't think anything particularly radical really needs to happen there.